Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, open your Bibles, please. Open your Bibles. Open your Bibles to the book of Joel. I'll wait a while, drink a Coke while you find it. The book of Joel. Joel. It is right before Amos, and Amos is right before Andy. So, you're too young to know things like that. But I'm going to read just one verse from Joel chapter 3. And the verse is verse number 14. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. I want to talk to you on that little line, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. Most of the time when I come to chapel, I do not preach. I talk to you. In case you ever want to hear me preach, I preach every Sunday twice at 523 Sibley in Hammond, Indiana, and be glad for you to drop by any time that you can. But this morning, I want to talk to you on that subject, multitudes in the valley of decision. I do not, oftentimes, I do not agree to offer my tapes of sermons here or allow you to sell them. And rarely ever do I say anything about them. But I would suggest that maybe you give consideration to purchasing this one, keeping it on file. You may need it from time to time. Father, bless me as I speak and our students as they hear, and each of us as we respond. Amen. This is the time of the year when you're facing decisions. It's the time of the year when more people seek counsel from me than the other time. In fact, I simply cannot see everybody. Time will not permit me to see everybody who wants my counsel in this time of the year. Our high school students, our college students, our college seniors, and others are making decisions. Should I be a pastor or an assistant? Should I start a church or take one already in existence? Should I stay for another degree? Should I marry him? When should I marry? Is she the one for me? What should my major be? Should I come back next year? Should I stay for summer school or should I go home for the summer? Should I take the job offer that I have? What degree should I pursue? Am I taking the courses for the right degree? These and many other decisions face you in these days. Let me help you make them this morning. I cannot counsel with all of you, so let me counsel with you from the pulpit. Where you are in life is the result of a long chain of links called decisions. Your present thinking is the result of those decisions that you have made. The young folks all over this room this morning who are strong Baptist, independent Baptist fundamentalists, who are because you chose to come to Howell Center College. If you had chosen to go to some other college, many of you would have adhered to their principles and their convictions and standards, or the lack of them, or as the case may be. Your success or failure in life will largely be determined by the decisions that you make. Decision must precede every action, and your action determines your degree of success or your success or failure. The worst possible state in life, in my opinion, is to be in the state of indecision. The hardest work in life is that of making decisions. I promise you that there are at least 300 decisions I have to make every week of my life. Brother Young counted them not long ago, the decisions that he asked me one Saturday morning alone. Questions he asked me and decisions I had to make. Over 90 one Saturday morning alone. And that is not unusual. because Brother Young is so ignorant he cannot make his own decisions. But that's unusual at all. To stand at the crossroads and not know which way to go is life's most miserable predicament. Psychiatrists say that indecision is one of the greatest reasons for nervous breakdowns and collapses. From birth to death, life forces you to make one decision after another. Now, let me begin today by saying that the fewer decisions you make, the fewer mistakes you make. So if you can make decisions that will make your decisions for you, you'll have fewer decisions to make and fewer chances to make mistakes. Let me first tell you one of the most dangerous, pious platitudes of our generation concerning making decisions. These little WWJD things. What would Jesus do? Now, in the first place, you don't know what he would do. So you have to decide what you think he would do. So in the final analysis, you're making the decision because you're trying to figure out what Jesus would do. Now, you never saw him, and by the way, he happened to be the Son of God, and he happened to be perfect, and because of that, the decisions you make are not the ones that like the ones that he made. Now, I think we ought to try to be Christ-like, but the truth is, when you say, I'll make my decision on what Jesus would do, you've got to add two words in there, I think, what I think Jesus would do, so you yourself become the decision-maker once again. Now, what to do? Number one, choose by proper habit. Habit is the one, Dr. Rice used to say, habit is the greatest servant. Proper habit. And improper habit is the greatest slavery in the world. For example, learn to say no. When I was a kid, I was your age, so I was a child. But when I was young, teenager especially, I used to practice saying no. My mother taught me this. I'd get in front of the mirror and I'd say it. No. 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 Over and over and over again, I'd say no. To this day, Miss Howes asked me for a kiss. Instinctively, no. 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 Not at all. And that's why I hate my mother. But everybody needs to learn to use the word no. Spurgeon said, learning to say no will be more use to you than learning to speak Latin. The former and late Mayor LaGuardia of New York City was asked the question, what is the most important quality a man needs to be mayor of New York City? And the late Mayor LaGuardia said, the most important quality to be a successful mayor in New York City is the ability to say no. You've heard this, you've read it in my books. Character is the doing of right and the refusing of wrong by reflex and instinct. You have responded to a certain decision or you responded to a certain stimulus, I'll say, so often until you just do it by reflex. So when somebody says to me, Brother Hiles, I'd like to counsel with you. I belong to the Baptist church over in Dyer Baptist or East Chicago Central, or I belong to Lake Village Baptist or Salt Village Baptist. Could I have an appointment? By instinct, I say no. No. Why? Because all these years I have refused to counsel with anybody who's a member of somebody else's church without the written permission from the pastor of that church. Now, that's reflex. Now, that's the reason young ladies, when young men make advances to them, if you said no and no and no and no, by reflex, you'll say no. There's no need to think. You have forced yourself to do right until it's in the subconscious. Now, let me say this. You've got to force yourself to do it first. You've got to make yourself respond to a certain stimulus, and you've got to force yourself, and you force yourself again, and you force yourself again, and you force yourself again, and you force yourself again. And finally, you've done it so much to when that stimulus comes by instinct. You've heard me tell this. I was driving down the street, on down Columbia Street, coming to 165th Street. Dr. G.B. Vick, at that time, one of my heroes and pastor of the largest church in the world at that time. Dr. Vick was sitting beside me, and I was a young preacher in my mid-30s. And all of a sudden, I realized that the light was turning red. And by the way, I was telling the fellows a while ago, I got pulled over by a policeman this week. Miss Hiles got sick at church Sunday morning, had to take the car back home, and I had to get a ride, so one of the security guards drove me home. We were driving down Sibley Street, and a policeman pulled over beside us. Gets out of the car and says, "Would you sign your book on marriage that somebody gave me, please?" You talk about a happy trooper, boy, I'll tell you for sure. And now I forgot what I was going to say. By reflex, talked to Vic and I were riding down the street. You thought I'd forgotten, didn't you? And I got to say it in a hurry. I forget it again. We came to this stoplight on 165th in Columbia, going south on Columbia. And all of a sudden, I looked up and the light had just turned red. And I jammed the brakes like that and pushed my hand out like that. I say, "What'd you push your hand out for?" "I was trying to keep Becky from hitting the windshield." Becky was grown. I was trying to keep her from hitting the windshield. I'm trying to say, I had done that so much. Now, Ms. Hiles does it. I don't care if she hits the windshield or not. But I didn't want Dr. Vick to hit the windshield either, by the way. But by reflex, I had put my right foot at the brake, right arm goes out. Right hit the brake, right arm goes out. Right foot at the brake, right arm goes out. Now, you listen to me. You keep on doing right, and do right, and do right, and do right, and do right, until doing right will be a reflex. It'll be in the subconscious, and that's the great way to make the right decisions. Number two, choose by principles. Don't make decisions. Years ago, as you know, most of you, I made 5 decisions that have made for me tens of thousands of decisions. So over 50 years ago, and I'll give it for those who've not heard it. Over 50 years ago, I made 5 decisions on my face in the wee hours of the morning in the sand hills and the pine thickets of East Texas. Number one, nobody will ever meddle with my preaching. Nobody. Nobody. Nobody will tell me what to preach, where to preach, when to preach, how to preach, how long to preach. Nobody will ever meddle with my preaching. Now, I made God a promise years ago. Number two, I made a promise that money will never be an issue in my ministry. And by the way, young men, you do the same thing. Money will never be an issue. I've never discussed money whatsoever. And number three, I made a promise to God, I'd live with the principle that I'd make my decisions on the basis of what's right and what's wrong and not what is expedient. For example, I won't join a ministerial association so I can get more popular in town, so more people will like me, so more folks will come to my church, so I can get more folks saved. No, Dr. Bob Jones Sr. used to say, and Dr. Evans has heard it again and again, he used to cup his hand like that and say, "It's never right to do wrong to get a chance to do right. It's never right to do wrong to get a chance to do right." I can stop halfway through that. It's never right to do wrong. You're not supposed to figure out how to get people saved. You're supposed to use God's method to get people saved and take your stand as God would have you. And so that's the third principle. Number one, I promised God nobody ever meddled with my preaching. Number two, I promised God that money would never be an issue. Number three, I promised God that my decisions would be made on the basis of what's right and what's wrong and not how it turns out or expediency. Number four, I made a decision that I would be loyal to principles and not to institutions. I'm 73 years old. One of these days I've got to step aside. I will not promise my loyalty to Howells Nursing College. No, I'll promise my loyalty to the principles and the doctrines and the positions of Howells Anderson College today, but my loyalty is not to institutions. My loyalty is to principles and truth. That's my loyalty. So if the day ever comes and Howells Anderson College doesn't practice and believe what is practiced and believed right now, I'll TP the building and then set it on fire. I made a promise to God years ago. I'd be loyal to principles and not to institutions. Number five, I made a promise I'd be a friend to my friends. Now, so when Uncle Harvey, my multimillionaire uncle, called me one day to the Mercantile Bank coffee shop in Dallas, Texas, and had lunch with me and said, "Son, I'm proud of you." I was a Baptist preacher, pastor in Texas. He said, I want to give you a stock in my business." And I said, "What?" He said, "I want to give you, get this now, $250,000 stock in my business." Now, young people, $250,000 then would be $2.5 million now, at least. And I said, "Uncle, what do you?" He said, "Oh, there'll be more later. But I want to start off with you having a $250,000 stock in my business." I said, "Well, what's the catch?" He said, "Nothing." He said, "Just go to Southwestern Seminary and get your doctor's degree." And I got up and walked out. He said, "What's the matter?" I said, "I can't do it. I mean, I wouldn't go to Southwestern Seminary to get my doctor's degree after I spent a little time I was there. They taught me that the resurrection was a bunch of blindfolded spirits in a vacuum and all of that, and laughed at soul winning." And I said, "No, I turned down, are you listening to me? I turned down $250,000. Boy, you say, but that's a tough decision. I didn't make that decision. That decision was made by a decision I made 50 years ago in the pine thickets of East Texas. Now, young people, you listen to me. You decide what you believe. You decide what decisions are going to determine your decisions, and you live by principles, and you won't have to make a lot of decisions in life." So when Jerry Falwell said to me, "Brother Hiles, if you'll come preach 3 sermons for me, I'll put them all 3 on Nationwide TV and give you $10,000. I said, "I'm sorry, Jerry. If you'd have said $10, I wouldn't have come, because when you set a certain stipend on my services, I won't come." I turned down $10,000. You said, "Brother Hiles, that tough decision. Didn't make it. Didn't make it. That was made on my knees over 50 years ago in the pine thickets of East Texas." Decide what you believe. Live by it. Die by it. Stand for it. Fall for it if you have to. But decide while you're young what you believe. So in my deacons, I came to Hammond, been here about a year. My deacon chairman, not the one I have now, not Ed Roush, my deacon chairman for years. The deacon chairman, a good man, by the way. He came to me and he said, "Pastor," he said, some of the deacons are concerned about your preaching. And I wouldn't give you a dime for a preacher who hadn't got some deacons concerned about his preaching. And he said, we're not going to fire you. We'd just like to talk with you about your preaching." He said, "Could we have a meeting to decide or to discuss your preaching?" I said, "Well, of course." He said, "Would Monday night be okay?" I said, "That'd be a good night." He said, 7 o'clock, is that okay?" I said, "That's a good time to have it." He said, the Francis Sunday School classroom in our building, would that be a good place to meet?" "Oh, sure." "Okay," he said, got it now. "Monday night, 7 o'clock, a meeting to discuss your preaching." I said, "Sure." Monday night about 7:15, he called me. He said, "Where are you?" I said, "Where have you called?" He said, "You're not here." "Well, I can't be there and here too." That's scientific truth. I learned that as a freshman in college. He said, "You said we could have a meeting tonight to discuss your preaching." I said, "You can. Have one every night." But I never told you I'd show up. Because I said, "Mr. Deacon Chairman, it's none of your cotton picking business what I preach. And not you or any deacon or the whole deacon board is going to tell me what to preach. Have one." You say, "Brother Hiles, boy, that was a tough decision. I didn't make it. My principles made it." That was decided 50 years ago in the pine thickets of East Texas. So when Curtis Hudson called me one day and said that there was rebellion at the sword of the Lord, and that he was about to lose his job. In fact, I quote him now. He said, "If you're against me, I'm gone." I said, "Dr. Hudson, you know I'm not against you. I'm always for you." That time, I was the most popular person outside the Sword of the Lord place itself, at the Sword of the Lord. No longer true, but I was then. But I got on the plane. I flew down to Murfreesboro at my own expense, or Nashville. Went to Murfreesboro. stood there and spoke for 3 hours to those people, the sword of the Lord, and stood solidly behind Curtis Hudson. And he would tell you, in heaven today, he would tell you that the reason he remained editor of the sword of the Lord was because I was his friend. Now, if you've got a friend, you stick by that friend. You say, Brother Hounds, you stood up there and risked your neck in front of all those people, the sword of the Lord. Boy, that's a tough decision. Didn't make it. Didn't make it. My principals made it for me. I decided 50 years ago under the pine thickets of East Texas, the sand hills of East Texas. That's why when I was told by the Southern Baptist Convention leaders I must support their liberal schools or get out, I got out. You say, Brother House, what made you decide to get out? Didn't decide to get out. My principals decided for me to get out. I decided years ago I'd be loyal to principles and not institutions. And when the institutions of Southern Baptist Convention were in bad, they lost my loyalty because I never was loyal to them. I was loyal to principles and no institution. That's what happens in America. There are people all over America still loyal to the Democratic Party and don't believe a thing the Democratic Party believes. Because Grandpa was a Democrat and Grandma was a Democrat and I like the word Democrat. There are godly people sitting in liberal Methodist and Presbyterian churches all over America who are my age or older, who are loyal to those churches. Why? Because they've been there all through these years and they were there when these churches stood for the truth, but now if they don't stand for the truth, they're there. They ought to get out. And I'm saying, be loyal to principles and not to institutions. Now, so that when the wealthy men in First Baptist Church of Hammond told me to choose the bus kids or their money, is no problem. I chose the bus kids and let their money go to the devil. I said to a college student, I said, you need never make more than a few decisions in life. Just make a few decisions that will make your decisions for you. Recently, Brother Young, about an hour and a half, we talked together, and I asked him, after we talked, he asked me question after question after question about the work, of course. And I asked him after we talked, we're sitting in the Red Carpet Club in Miami, I think it was. And I was over here working in one place, he was over another. And I said, Brother Young, would you count the number of questions you've asked me tonight? And he came back and he said, I've asked you 38 questions tonight. Now, I doubt very seriously if I made a single decision. Look at me, I'm talking to you. I doubt very seriously if I made a single decision that night. My principals made those decisions for me. In fact, one of the decisions I made, Brother Young said, man, that's exactly what you said 8 years ago when I asked you the same question about another person. Well, that's one. See, if you let your principals make the decisions, you don't have to remember what you said yesterday. Because you'll react the same way all the time. Number three. Decide where you're going. And boy, listen to this carefully. Decide where you're going. Some of you young people need to decide, where are you headed? If you're going to be a barber, go to barber college. Not brain surgery school. If you're going to be a doctor, don't go to a school of dentistry. If you're going to be a plumber, don't go to a medical college. If you're going to be a Baptist preacher, don't go to a non-denominational Baptist college. You heard what I said at pastor school. I love some of those men down there at Pensacola and Bob Jones University, but a Baptist preacher ought not to train any place that's a Baptist school. The world turns, get this statement. The world turns aside to let a man pass who knows where he's going. Such a man inspires confidence and deserves to be followed. But how can you have followers if you don't know where you're going? Let me show you. Dr. Evans, come up here and stand behind me. Face this way, would you please? Face that way. Now, Dr. Evans, I want you to follow me, okay? Okay. Well, do it. Is he following me? Follow me, Dr. Evans. He can't, because I ain't going nowhere. Thank you. You did a good job. Except they disobeyed, didn't follow me. Now, listen, if you don't know where you're going, how can you expect folks to follow you? While you're in, you ought not to get your diploma on a platform wondering what you're going to do with your life. Decide where you're going. Well, you say, well, the house, I want to wait till I'm older. You got the same brain now you're going to have when you're older, and it's not newer now than it is, and it's not better to use now than it is. Well, then use it and decide where you're going. Young man comes to me. He's graduating. This happened this last month. Going to be a pastor. He said, I've been asked to go to a foreign mission field and spend a few years. Should I go? I said, if you're going to be a pastor in America, the answer is no. You don't get to Waxahachie, Texas by way of Japan. I mean, look, did you know that thing up there between your shoulders that sticks up like that? It's got two holes right here and two nostrils right here and a big hole right here. Did you know it's there for something other than beauty? And in some cases, it's not even there for that. Decide where you're going. A 28-year-old, get this now, 28-year-old young man who's going to pastor is asking me if he could should accept a job as an assistant pastor. Well, of course not. You're going to pastor. You're 28 years old. You say, Brother Hiles, I mean, at 28, good night. When I was 26 years old, I was running 1,500 people in Sunday school. Of course, you're not as smart as I am, but nor as cute. But I'm trying to say, direction. Know where you're going. Decide where you're going. And then you make the decisions on the basis, are they on the road? A pastor asked a graduate to come and work for him, and I'm glad I thought of this. A pastor asked one of our graduates to come to work for him, and he said, I can't pay you anything, but whenever we get to where we can, I'll put you on full time. Now, I don't think you all be too good to do that. But I wouldn't want to work for a man that'd be so bad he'd want you to do that. But look, find out where you're going. If you're a fella and God's called you to pastor, don't take homemaking and marriage. Some of you fellows look like you'd qualify for that. I thank God. As a young man, I decided where I was going. And the decisions I've made have been, are they on the road? Do they propel me to where I'm going to go? A guy came to me last week. He said, I've been asked to be an assistant pastor. I said, what church? He told me. I said, what size is it? He said, they're around 50. Wish I could do that. I'd fire the pastor and call this guy to be the pastor instead of the assistant. How long has he been there? Oh, 6 or 8 years. You can't get more than 50 in 6 or 8 years. Go to Florida and pick peaches the rest of your life. I'm in the house. No, numbers don't amount to anything. Well, you're right in your case. They never will. If numbers don't amount to anything, smart addict, why don't you marry some 95-year-old woman? If numbers don't amount to anything, choose some 400-pound beauty and marry her. Decide where you're going. Decide where you're going. Mrs. Caleb did. Married a 400-pound beauty. At least half that. I don't mean half 400, half 400-pound, but not beauty. That's what I meant. So somehow you're not as much fun as you were a while ago. Number four. Oh, this is so important. Build on the right decisions of older people. Watch how other people have turned out who've made the same decision. Look at me, boys. I'm talking to you. Have enough sense to see the guy that's wrecked his life and see how he did it. And find out how the guy that's succeeding, how he got there. That's what my counseling is. I simply counsel for you to do what, in your decision, you to make the decision that's turned out right by the most people who had the same decision to make. I know a girl who married an unsaved man. He got saved. They're happy Christians. Yes, and for every one like that, I can tell you 100 that married an unsaved man lived a wrecked, miserable, ruined life. See, what you're going to, you're following the exception rather than the rule. You better follow the rule rather than the exception.
Billy Sunday never went to college.
Let me shake your faith in yourself. Let me ruin your future. Let me lower your self-esteem many notches. You are not a Billy Sunday. I'll make a deal with you. Try out for the White Sox in baseball. Become their left fielder. And then surrender to preach, and I'll say you don't have to go to college. If you want to be like Billy Sunday all the way, be like Billy Sunday all the way. But for every Billy Sunday, there are 1,000 men who are preachers or tried to preach who didn't go to college and didn't finish college, who washed out. You better follow the 1,000 rather than the one. Number 5, when a special decision must be made, you have to make it. And many of you have heard me say this in my study. If it must be made, I would suggest first you lose your own will. Doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what you want to do, lose your own will. Then set a date to make the decision. I mean, not the next few hours or days, but the next few months. Set a date to make the decision. Seek counsel from folks who've had to make that same decision and have successfully made it. Claim the mind of Christ every day, several times a day, between now and the time you must make that decision. Make your decision in faith after you have lost your own will, decided to make it out yonder a few months from now, and it's sought the counsel of folks who faced the same thing and successfully made the right decision. And after you have begged God to give you the mind of Christ at 10 o'clock on September 3rd, 2000, and that's the day I'll make my decision. Dear God, give me your mind. I claim your mind for 10 o'clock, September 3rd, 2000. Beg him and beg him, losing your own decision, and then the decision has to be made, make it and never look back. Never look back. I came to Hammond. I had to make the decision. I didn't want to come, but I had to lose that. I called my pastor and I said, "Pastor, what do you think I'll do?" And he said, "First, you got to lose your own will." He said, "You got to get the place, for you don't want to stay in Garland. You don't want to go to Hammond. It doesn't matter what happens. You have no will of your own. Lose it." I had to make a decision a certain day. I begged for the mind of Christ. I pleaded for the mind of Christ. Lost my own will, sought counsel from Dr. Robertson and my pastor and two or three others, Brother Olaf, two or three others. And then, when the deadline came, I had to make it. Not to make it meant I made it to stay. So I had to make it. And I claimed the mind of Christ and decided to come to Hammond. Now listen carefully. Suppose I'd made the wrong decision. Suppose I stayed in Garland. You would not be here today. The Catholics would own this building, or some secular company would have bought it and built houses here. No Howells Anderson College. You would not be here. If I had made the wrong decision, many of you would never have met the one who is or is to be your wife. In some ways, I was deciding whether or not to give you a chance to meet the woman that God had for you. Many of you who are saved in churches pastored by our graduates would still not be saved. As I was walking the streets of Garland, Texas, and driving the streets of Garland in Dallas County, begging for God to let me have His mind, let me have the mind of Christ, I've got to make the right decision, I was holding your future and your family's future, and your unborn children's future in my hands. Some of you would never have gotten saved if I had made the wrong decision that day. And you would be burning, you would burn in hell forever and ever and ever and ever. The Philippines would never have known Rick Martin. Hundreds of thousands of saved people in Chicago would have never heard the gospel. All of that was hanging in the balances the days I spent in the Valley of Decision. Talk about abortion. Talk about abortion. You selfish young people. Well, I just never wanted to enter God's service. I hate to say this, but successful people never even think about it, never wanted to, or don't want to. Successful people think, what's the right thing to do? Oh, boy, you're against abortion. You're against these doctors who take some instruments and murder an unborn child just as much alive as a six-day-old child is and murders that child in cold blood. You're against that. But you'll make some selfish decisions and abort the new birth of thousands of people who will burn in hell. I say that doctor murderer is better than you are. So don't go your selfish way and blow it. You're worse than the murderers who take the lives of unborn children if you do. Hey, get this. Those doctors that murder those children, guess where those children go? These doctors who are aborting these childs and murdering my children and murdering these kids are sending them to heaven. If you don't do the will of God, you'll send people to hell by aborting their spiritual birth. It's an old story. Some of you old settlers have heard it. Some of you new ones have not. World War II, I was a paratrooper. I became a member of the parachute maintenance company. They called us riggers. We packed the parachutes for the entire 82nd Airborne Division. One day, General Gavin, one of my great heroes, General James Gavin, by the way, every time we jumped, he was the first one out of the first plane, the general. General James Gavin called us together and said that the Mexican consul is coming to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and he's going to review the troops. And he said all the 82nd Airborne Division, 10,000 in the division at that time, were going to jump for the Mexican consul. He said, now that means the parachute maintenance company have to pack 10,000 parachutes. We had 230 people in our company. We had to pack 10,000 parachutes. We worked day and night. And finally the day came when, by the way, when we packed the parachute, we put it inside a little case like that, all the silk inside the case. Just inside here was a little pocket. In that pocket was a little book about the size of this card here, a little book, a little pocket and a book. When you pack the chute, you pull that little card out, and you wrote your name and the day you packed the chute, and you put it inside the little pocket in the parachute. The day came to jump. Since we were the parachute maintenance company, we packed the chutes. We jumped first because we had to get out on the landing field, and we had to pick up the chutes after the troops had landed. Well, we jumped. We took our chutes and got away, and were watching the others jump. On this side of me, we had a long table where we packed the chute. On this side was a young man named Alley from Ohio. On this side was a young man named Collingsworth. He was from Pennsylvania. We packed the chutes. We jumped first. We're watching the others jump. Now, as you jump, you stand in, you put your left foot, the ball of your left foot, at the edge of the door right there, and you put your hands on the outside of the door, and you look out toward the horizon. Never look down or you won't jump. I promise you, you won't jump if you look down. You stand like that. We sit nine people in those days. You'll see 46s and C-47s. Nine men over here, nine over here. And the sergeant would say, stand up and hook up. We're over the jump field. Stand up and hook up. We stood up and we took the hooks on the end of our static line, hooked them on a long cable came down through the plane so that the static line would open the chute for us. If that didn't open, we pulled the reserve. And If that didn't open, it ruined our day. Then the sergeant would say, check equipment. You would check the fellow's equipment parachute in front of you, and the fellow behind you would check yours carefully to see everything was okay. He'd say, count off. And from the 18th man, 18 okay, then 17 okay, 16 okay, 15 okay, 14 okay, 13 okay, 12 okay, 11 okay, 10 okay, 9 okay, 8 okay, 7 okay, 6 okay, 5 okay, 4 okay, 3 okay, 2 okay, 1 okay. Stand in the door, he'd say. We'd stand in the door, put our hands like that. Ready? Jump. We watched the men as they jumped out of the planes, and as you jump out, you count 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. By that time, the chute's supposed to open. We watch the bodies fly out of the plane, and the chutes open. Hundreds of bodies, one of the most beautiful sights you've ever seen in your life. Hundreds of chutes covering the sky. All of a sudden, Collingsworth said, look! Look! Look, Jack! Look, Allie! Look! A fellow's parachute didn't open. He had a streamer. A streamer is when the parachute won't open because the lines get around it. The parachute is supposed to open like that. But the lines get twisted around it, and it can't open because the air can't get up there. And this is the way the parachute is, and you fall to your death. Look, Jack! Look, Allie! Look! He has a streamer! Look! We watched that young man fall to his death. Each of us was only wondering one thing. Whose name is inside that parachute case? We ran across the field as quickly as we could. By the time we got there, General Gavin was there. He got out of his jeep, was standing there with his foot stirring that fellow's body like you'd stir some stew. Just blood, broken bones, and flesh covered with blood. General Gavin, Private Howell, 386-4679, Parachute Maintenance Company. Private Collingsworth, Private Annie, Parachute Maintenance Company. General, would you please see who packed the chute? And General Gavin took that parachute, held it like this, shook the blood off of it and the flesh, and reached in and took the card out of the pocket. He said, the name is Collingsworth. I saw that young man jump as high as I've ever seen a young man jump, scream as loudly as I've ever heard a young man scream, and begin to run across the field, screaming, oh God, I wish I'd been more careful. Oh God, I wish I'd been more careful. Oh God, he's dead, it's my fault, I wish I'd been more careful. That night, I slept in the same barracks with him as I did every night. Through the night, that young man was screaming. I can hear his voice screaming. He's dead because it's my fault. I wish I'd been more careful. That's not near as bad as a young person not being careful as he trains for God's service and as he makes the decisions that will affect the lives, yea, the eternity, the heaven or the hell of literally thousands of people. Be careful, young people. Don't abort yet unborn people. People not yet born again. Be careful that your decision is his decision and not yours. I plead with you for your sake, for his sake, and for the sake of a country and the sake of thousands and tens of thousands of people. Make the decisions according to what I've given you today. May God bless you as you do. Thank you. Thank you.